Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast. I'm Andy Mitten, and I'm joined by a United legend, a man who was a star from a bygone era, not just for United, but for Celtic too. I'm with Lou Macari. Welcome, Lou.
Thanks, Andy.
I see you around an awful lot at games. We spoke at Yeovil, I remember, but I've never had a proper sit-down chat with you in the last, and maybe for a year or two, but of one television programme I've seen in the last year that has had an impact on me personally and also a lot of people judging by the reaction, it was marvellous about the former Stoke City kitman. And it was an incredibly powerful piece of television. It was wonderful. And I'm not embarrassed to say it, I shed a tear at one point in it. And I'm not an overly sentimental type of person, but it was just a beautiful piece of television. And you knew that this guy existed. It wasn't drama. It was real life. And you were a major part in that.
Well, I've shed a tear as well, Andy, and I never thought I would do, but watching any television programme, but I've seen it a few times now, and I shed a tear every time. My kit man, who's watched it 41 times, he's going for a record. Every time I see him, and I ring him up quite regularly, I say, how many times have you seen it now? And last time it was 32, now it's up to 41. But I can understand him wanting to see it over and over again, because it's something he probably, BAFTA and whatever, he never ever considered, like myself, what the outcome would be. It simply was, as I'm talking to you now, I sat down with a writer in a hotel in Stoke-on-Trent for about 3 hours one day, talking about my time at Stoke, my time with my kit man, what I asked him to do and what he did for me, which is what you see in the drama. And he went away, and after he went away, I thought, well, that's the last time I'll see him again. I thought it was some kind of joke. You know, I've played plenty of jokes on my teammates in the past, so I thought, here's somebody getting a bit of revenge on me and trying to tell me that this is heading for television. But, of course, it did head for television. I saw it in London at a premiere. I saw it in Stoke at a premiere, and I thought, well, this is all right. And the reaction from the people that were there was fantastic, but you'd expect that in Stoke-on-Trent. And then the night it was on BBC, which was September, I think it was 25th or 26th, I couldn't see it. It was actually at Old Trafford at a Ryan Giggs tribute dinner. And the dinner went on till well after 11. I switched my phone off, obviously. And it was on BBC at 9 o'clock till 10:30. So when I came out of the dinner, obviously the first thing I did was switch my phone on. And all it did was beep. And it beeped and beeped and beeped. I got in the car, and all the way to almost Stoke-on-Trent, it never stopped beeping, and I thought, oh, something's happened here, I wonder what it is. And I didn't for 1 minute think it was people were all phoning up to congratulate me on what they thought of it. I just thought there's something that must have come across a certain way on television. And I stopped to listen to some of the messages, and they were obviously all complimentary. And the last part of my journey along the A500, it stopped to my house about 15 minutes. And I've got to admit, I cried the whole way home. I don't know why, and I still to this day don't know why, but I'd realised then it had been accepted as being good, no more than that. And then people started talking about a BAFTA, and I'd never heard of a BAFTA. I didn't know how it worked, I didn't know what you do. And of course, as we got nearer the time, it had been in the Final Four, and still when it's in the Final Four, you're delighted, but like I've always been, I want to be a winner. I don't want to be in the first four. Not like United, you know, being in the top four is great, but I wanted to be in that number one spot. And I didn't know that was going to happen until the night of the BAFTAs. Sat there in the Theatre Royal in Drury Lane in completely different surroundings than I'd ever been used to. All these people, you know, Sir Alan Sugar and Karen Brady and lots of other real, you know, Ant and Dec and
What did Nello make of that, the surroundings? Of course, he'd already met archbishops. He'd already been on the starting line at the Oxford and Cambridge boat race. He probably wasn't overawed by it.
Took it all in his stride.
Did he?
Andy, as though this has been normal throughout his life. And of course, it hasn't been normal. And on the way down in the train to the BAFTAs, he said to me, who'll be there? And I mentioned all the names. And he said, well, Sir Alex be there? And I said, no, I don't think he will be. But then a couple of weeks later, we were at a league manager's end of the season function, and he asked me, we went down to that as well, we were invited down, the two of us, and he asked me, would Sir Alex be there? And I said, I don't think so. But we arrived at the hotel, and who was standing at reception but Sir Alex?
And had he seen Marvellous?
At the time, no. And he said, oh, I can tell you his exact words, here they come, here they come. You two are more famous than me now. So that was a real compliment. He hadn't seen it, and he actually said to me, my wife's seen it. She says it's absolutely brilliant, but I'm going to get to see it, and I'm looking forward to it. And then yesterday at breakfast, I didn't know he'd arrived here in San Jose. He was in the restaurant, come over, and he says, hey, he said, come here. I said, what? He said, gave me a big hug. And said, I've seen it three times now.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen it three times, which coming from our greatest manager is a real compliment. And I said to him, well, I was just about to say, what do you think? But he just said, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I think the boss, with it being about football, you know, was really into it because of the scenes in it about the football and the kit man coming in. And, you know, Alex going back to his time at Manchester United, well, you know, the kit man, he had Norman Davis and he had Albert, and both characters in their own right. So it made my day. As a matter of fact, it made my week, and it's made my trip.
Yeah.
So getting that compliment from the boss is fantastic.
And did you really spot Nello in a car park?
I did.
As everybody was leaving. And what did you see in him that you thought he could be good in a dressing room?
Well,
because I know a lot of people who'd be pretty harsh of making a judgment of someone with learning difficulties. You saw something in him where you thought he can be good in a professional dressing room full of professional sportsmen.
Yeah, he was there at the beginning of the day when I walked in, as you've seen in the drama. Just as you saw in the drama, he was singing along with the rest of them and wishing me all the best. But then when I come out after work, he was the only one there because it was something like 8 hours later. And I thought, anybody that's waited 8 hours for me.
And what did he say to you?
Hey, I said to him, what are you doing still here? And he said, just wish you all the best and all that.
He'd wished you all the best 8 hours before.
But he's one of them that does hang around, and I got to know him better after that. And, you know, I looked at him, and of course I asked him why he wasn't at work, and he told me he'd been sacked out from the circus. I did that, Andy. I started laughing, and I didn't mean to be rude, but I started laughing because I'd never known anybody sacked from the circus. So that tickled me right away. That really, really tickled me. And I thought, so then I asked him what he did in the circus in case it was something that would you could understand why he'd been sacked. And when he told me, he used to fall off the back of the fire engine and kids used to throw stuff over him. I thought, how the bloody hell can you get sacked for that? But sacked he was, and I liked the circus clown bit, and I thought dressing room, circus clown, performer.
Yeah.
So I did what you see in the drama, and I said, you want to work for me? And
straight away?
Yeah, right away.
There and then, because you needed a kit man.
Yeah, I said, come in on Monday.
Yeah.
And you start on Monday.
And he said yes straight away.
He said yes straight away. I gave him £25. I said, go up the costume shop before you come in and Stoke.
Yeah.
Get some gear on.
Yeah.
I said, and come in as though you're a performer.
Yeah.
So, and he came. And, of course, the players didn't know what to expect. Yeah. And he came and walked in the door, and somebody said to me, who's that? I said, it's a new kit man. Mm. Of course, he had a chicken outfit on. And, and the response from the players was ranging from, I can't swear on here, Andy, can I?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Well, let's just say it was that you see on Twitter, FFS.
Yeah.
Right? That was nearly every one of them saying, FFS. You must be joking.
How old would Nello have been at the time?
At the time, 50s. He would have been probably 50.
Yeah. So your new kit man is a 50-year-old man with learning difficulties dressed as a chicken.
That's it, on the first day.
And you've got seasoned pros there. Who would have been the bigger names there?
We had Mark Steen there. We'd taken him in. And, he set about his work.
Was he a good kit man?
there's a pause. No. Well, his job was he got the kit out in the morning.
Yeah.
Took the kit back up after they trained.
Yeah.
Made sure that everything was ready for the game on a Saturday. But the highlight of his day every day was lunchtime.
Yeah.
Because a big eater.
Yeah.
So the kit didn't really matter. And it just grew, and then
he grew.
he certainly grew. and the sort of response from the players to him was fantastic.
Did it change? At first, was it like, who's this idiot? And did people warm to him, or did they embrace him straight away?
They embraced him straight away because he was clever.
Right.
In what way? Without trying to be clever.
Yeah.
He had an answer for their
smart
remarks.
Wisecracks, yeah.
And if he didn't, he used to come to see me and ask me what he should do about it. But lots of things happened, Andy, that made it all, I can assure you, made it all really worthwhile for us.
Yeah.
You know, he was locked in the sauna, fully clothed, for about 2 hours one day.
By and who?
By all the players. They put a broom across the sauna door so he couldn't get out. And I rescued him hours later. But he loved it. He loved all those sort of things.
What was he like when he came out of the sauna?
Red. Red.
Did he complain? Did he not like...
Never complained about anything. Never complained. I used to give him the money and I said, we're going away to Hartlepool.
Yeah.
Go and get... there's 25 quid again. Go and get I want you to be Lord Baldwin of Kiel.
Yeah.
So he got to the joke shop and get the Lord Baldwin of Kiel outfit, which was top hat and tails.
Yeah.
And we'd make our way to play Hartlepool, get to into the hotel up at North East on the Friday night. And I would inform all the staff in the hotel that it's a special occasion. We've got Lord Baldwin of Kiel with us. Can you make sure you look after him? So we'd sit down for dinner and they'd give him the full watch because he'd be sitting with top hat and tails on. And they would come up and address him as Lord Baldwin.
Yeah.
And he just took it in his stride. And at the end of the meal, they'd come with a cigar box. He'd never seen a cigar box in his life.
So the players are just loving it.
Yeah.
Because if you're happy, you're happy. If you're laughing, it just added to the team spirit.
Without a doubt. And he could. And I could ask him to do something.
Yeah, and he'd do it.
And I used to... make out I'd fallen out with somebody, as managers do, with a journalist.
Yeah.
And I used to get on the phone, pretending I was speaking to this journalist on the other end.
Yeah.
And he'd be in my office, and he'd be looking at me, he'd be listening, and he'd be watching. And I'd be going to this journalist, don't come near this place again.
Yeah.
You gave somebody 9 out of 10 last week, and he should have 10 out of 10. Yeah. Now F off, sort of thing. He'd take all this in.
Yeah.
And about 2 hours later, before the match, this particular journalist would come and pick up his tickets. He'd be waiting for him at the front door, and he'd throw him out, not realising I was joking, with a local radio guy called George Andrews, who's very funny and he's very witty, but he does the radio every week. So I gave it one of the games. George, you're an absolute disgrace. Slammed the phone down on him. And,
so your kit man's waiting to eject him when he arrives, but he's done nothing wrong.
He's done nothing
so
wrong.
So you just get this complete breakdown in communication where he thinks, why have I been stopped from doing my job?
So with this particular one with George Andrews, I thought, right, it's going to be funny. He'll do the usual, eject him. So the game starts. I forget who we're playing. I'm sitting in the dugout and he's in the back. I'll slung him right in the back. And one of the club sort of officials...
Yeah.
Popped a head round the dugout after about 15 minutes
while
into
the game's
match.
Going on.
Yeah, and says to me, boss, George Andrews is tied up in the kit room. He's bound and gagged. Shall I let him out? And I went, what? He says he's got sellotape over his mouth and he's been tied up. So I looked round at him and of course he's done it. And I said, yeah, of course you can let him out. I said, he's supposed to start work at 3 o'clock, match commentary. So all those things. And he showed his loyalty towards me.
Yeah.
And that's what I expected from him to start with, because he was kind and he was... And you know in football, you, when you're employing anybody, whether it be a player, whether it be backroom staff, you never know what you're employing until you get them. But I knew right away what I was employing. I was employing somebody that would be delighted to be at work every day. Love every minute of it because he was a Stoke supporter.
Yeah.
And his job from the circus, I just thought that we can bring that into the football club.
And fans knew who he was. Was he a character?
So
you'd go away to Hartlepool and there might be 1,000 Stoke there.
They all know who he was.
They did sing his name as well.
Yeah, they sang his name.
And he loved it.
He loved it. That's how he played. That, I mean, I was always going to play him, but at Villa Park, in the testimonial, it was Gordon Cowan's testimonial, I'd stripped him and put him on the bench and I'd jokingly said to him about half an hour from the end because he couldn't last half an hour. I said, go and get warmed up. He got warmed up. But the Stoke supporters, and we had about 4,000 that night behind the goals, kept chanting, "We want Nello." So I told them to get warmed up behind the goals, right next to them all.
So this is like a dream come true.
It's a dream come true from, so he went round there, he got warmed up, and then when he come back to the dugout, exhausted, I may add, just warming up, they were all chanting, "We want him, we want Nello on the pitch." Yeah. So I put him on.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing in the drama which wasn't true, but he rectified that when he was asked, "Did you score?"
Yeah.
And he went, "No." But,
so he came on?
He came on.
For how long?
He came on for about 10 minutes.
Did he touch the ball?
Yeah.
Could he play football at all?
No, he couldn't.
Just terrible.
No, terrible.
Yeah.
He went to control the ball, missed it, and it hit his backside.
Yeah.
And it dropped to the floor.
There's a beautiful bit where he goes home and tells his mum that he's got a new job and it's working full time for Stoke City.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Because she didn't believe him and nobody believed him.
No.
But it was actually true.
Yeah. Well, that's down to the writer because I wasn't aware that happened. And when I saw that in the movie, I liked that. Mm. That was great to see him. He's on the road to recovery now.
Mm.
And I think the greatest thing about the whole story, wrapping it all up in one, is this is a guy who did get the sack from the circus.
Mm.
As you saw, the ringmaster told me, fuck off.
Yeah.
I did get the sack. And then whatever number of years later, and I haven't exactly counted up, he's at the BAFTAs, at the Theatre Royal in London. It cannot happen to anybody. Yeah. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
But and for me as well, Andy, you know, I started off as a footballer. I started off dreaming of playing for Celtic, winning the Scottish Cup, winning whatever I can for Celtic. Then, of course, I come to United and I'm thinking the same, what I can win for United and can I be at the club and can I stay there long enough? And, well, that happened for me. I stayed there 11 years, but at no time ever did I think about a BAFTA.
Did you think you were going to win the BAFTA?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Because you just thought it was better than the competition?
No, I didn't even know what the competition was. Right. Never seen the competition.
Yeah.
I just thought the response I'd had from that night in September to the BAFTA night, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. And it's only then did I think, it's going to happen.
Have you brought him to Old Trafford? Has he ever been?
He's been to Old Trafford, yeah.
Has he?
Yeah. Brought him up for a game and loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
Loved the buffet.
Did he?
Loved the buffet in the Warwick Suite.
Right. And around Stoke.
And presented the Man United disabled. We presented him with 100 DVDs of Marvellous.
Yeah.
Which went down.
That's good because
on the night.
Mudser are a wonderful group and they do a lot of work and there's good people there and they featured on a previous podcast and we will do another one with you this year, Mudser. Maybe go to an away game with you. I know you've got to get off very soon. Let's talk a little bit about Manchester United rather than your former kit man at Stoke who's occupied the majority of this podcast. How you feel?
You can understand why, can't you?
I think
he's
it's
funny.
Great. I could talk about him for a long, long time. And it's just
and if you met him, you can talk about him even more.
And he's a character in Stoke, I'd imagine, around the
Potteries.
So would he be known in at Kiel or in Burslem or in Hanley? Everyone knows him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's better known than me.
Yeah. And people feel like they care for him. I like that. That society shouldn't just be the survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
That people have a duty to care for others. And they can't all become like Nello and become kit men or have BAFTA-winning programmes made about him. But there's a lot of good humanity in that programme. And it was hugely enjoyable. United this year were sat here in California ahead of the 15-16 season. How are you
thinking that the club will do this year, the team will do. There's four new signings coming so far. What do you make of Schweinsteiger?
Well, I think after last year, Andy, I'm a bit cautious because we were on the tour last year, we were undefeated, and you automatically take the view, that's it.
People got carried away.
Got carried away a little bit. And
after beating Real Madrid.
Yeah, and until you see, I think, the first few Premier League games, I think it's difficult to actually sum up, but brought in four new players, which has created real competition for places in that area, in that midfield area, if you want to call it, which is good for any club. Goalkeeping situation's a little bit, uncertain at this moment in time, let's say, and I'd prefer it not to be uncertain, because for me...
But what can United do about that? You've got a situation where a player is under contract, Real Madrid are used to getting what they want, and David De Gea, he's been nothing but professional here. I've seen him around, he's smiling, but clearly he would prefer to play for Real Madrid in his hometown. I can understand that, but I don't think United should be bullied. Or do you think it's better sort it out and get a replacement in? Or, I mean, you don't have to agree with me at all, I quite like the fact that United are saying, we'll do business if you want to give us Ramos. Don't think you can come and bully us. We're not a village football team, we're Manchester United. But I'm not a football manager. How do you see it as a manager? Would you prefer some continuity? Or is there plenty of time left? There's still a month left of the transfer window.
I think there's no doubt the manager would like everything sorted long before the season starts. And, you know, we've got one goalkeeper here in San Jose, Sam Johnson. But if there's problems, which there are nowadays, Andy, I don't need to tell you, you're in the football game, there's massive problems nowadays with any transfer compared to my day. I jump in the car in Scotland via Liverpool, end up in Manchester and sign, because I want to sign, I want to play here. And
but you were going to sign for Liverpool, and then I had no option, Mr. Creran intercepted you.
Faddy was there. And anyway, I end up at the place that I had a choice, Liverpool are here. And no hesitation that I came here, but that no hesitation doesn't happen anymore. These players, you know, I don't think it's their fault totally. They've got an entourage advising them. The advice normally is bad. Where you should go, where you shouldn't go. And let's be honest, those that are supposedly looking after the players are only looking after themselves. And if there's more bucks somewhere else, they'll advise them to go there. And I think we've seen the last of the days where you're going to get players who really, really want to come and play for Manchester United. I argue with Paddy about this. Paddy still says, yeah, there's players that want to come and play for Manchester United. I'm not so sure about that.
But I can understand it here. He's from Madrid. Yeah. It's Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I don't hold it against him.
No.
You know, his partner's in Madrid. His family are in Madrid. His friends are in Madrid. No. But Manchester United are saying, you have signed a contract and you are our player. And I agree with that. But there is uncertainty. But isn't there always uncertainty at a football club? Aren't you always? When you were manager of Celtic or Stoke or Swindon, I'm sure there was never a time where everything was going swimmingly well and you didn't have doubts over somebody.
It was a lot easier then.
Was it?
Yeah, a lot easier. This because of the money in the game now.
But there's money, you know. The money now is
getting out of hand. It's overtaking anything else.
So there's more people playing part in the decision-making process.
Yeah.
So the old football agent might have been, you know, someone who you could converse with. Now you go into a company, you're talking image rights, you're talking... You know, it's complicated.
It's complicated, it's not right. It's,
and there's ego as well.
There's ego.
United and Madrid are two heavyweights.
Yeah.
They don't want to back down. They don't need to back down.
Yeah.
They don't need to sell anyone.
I don't really get the connection, though, between De Gea and Ramos, because if De Gea wants to go to Real Madrid, he wants to go to Real Madrid. But Ramos has just come on the scene, supposedly late on, and we don't even know, Andy, whether he wants to come to Manchester United. We don't know that. We've read all the reports in the paper, and that's the lads who write in the paper. That's their job, to fill the back pages. So,
well, you know, I'm based between Barcelona and Manchester, and it's my job. I make a full-time living right about football, and I've spoken to people who know the Ramos situation well. I've not had any indication that he wants to go to Manchester United. I've been told that he's not happy in Madrid. He's fallen out big time with Florentino Perez. That could change in a month's time.
When he's
had the rise that maybe he wants. Said he's surrounded by people of sometimes dubious character. So you're building up a picture of somebody But why should United let De Gea go a year early? He signed a contract. Why should you let a brilliant goalkeeper?
Oh, I would be delighted.
What would you do?
I'd be delighted if the powers that be here said, no, you're not going, you're staying here. Yeah. But then...
But they have said that. But things might... Clearly, if a player wants to leave any football club, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
End of.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation.
There's brinkmanship in there. You know,
it's a difficult situation for everyone involved, but I don't get the link, Andy, between De Gea moving and Ramos possibly moving. If De Gea's going to move, he's going to move. If Ramos is coming here, it's a completely separate deal, completely separate thing, completely separate agents and people looking for different money. But, you know, you're closer to it than I am, as you say, in Spain. And you haven't had any indication that he wants to join Real Madrid. He wants to join Manchester United. Mm. Well, that's good enough for me, because that's the feeling I get.
Mm. Now, if he doesn't see a future at Madrid, he will look around at the four or five clubs who could afford him, and United would be one of them.
Yeah.
I've not heard any stories that, you know, he used to dream of standing on the Stretford end when he was a kid in Seville. He's a Seville fan. Yeah. He's not a Real Madrid fan. And I don't think he's particularly pining to live in Manchester and leave a world-class city in Madrid. But I think United is saying, look, we'll do business with you, but it has to be on our terms and not just your terms. You can't just come and cherry-pick our best goalkeeper at a low fee because he's got a year left on his contract. If you want him, well, you give us Ramos then.
Well, when you're in the last year of your contract, it's not a case of putting a price on your goalkeeper's head. There is a sort of a figure that he's worth.
It's a low one.
Well, it is a low one anyway, because you're in the last year of your contract. I think that applies to all players in this contract situation we've got now. I'd just like to see it cleared up.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate uncertainty, but I really hate uncertainty regarding your player of the year for the last 2 years.
Aside from that, or which other players are you happy with? You know, you seem that like Luke Shaw's looked fitter on this tour, hasn't he?
Well, happy with them all because we've won the games. Yeah. They are fit. They're getting fitter. They haven't picked up any injuries. Whereas, you know, at the end of the tour last year, we'd a fair injury list. Yeah. And I think we've got to wait. We must wait until see the Premier League games. No disrespect to the American teams.
Yeah.
They're not a test from.
Well, look at last year, beat Real Madrid and then lose at home to Swansea. What tactically, what system do you think Louis van Gaal will go with? It seems to be a 4-3-3.
Well,
it was a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, it was difficult for him last season because of the injuries he picked up and he changed it around. But we came here and we started off with three at the back, which I never fancied. I never thought that would work. But we won all the games, so it's ludicrous for me to say that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But then we changed it from one thing to another. I just think at Manchester United, especially at Old Trafford, it's not so much about the system, it's about the personnel you pick to go out there and play, what they can do on the pitch. And that's where it's always been, going back to the days of George Best and even before that.
You don't seem to be a man who's obsessed by tactical
systems. No, I'm not, and I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. It's just about the players.
Yeah.
You get results down to the players. You get good results down to the players. You get bad results down to the players. And over the years that I was at Old Trafford with three different managers, I never had a manager that actually told me and preached to me before I went out what to do. We ran around, we played. And if we didn't do that, he would get us at the end of the game and say, "Weren't happy with your contribution today. There wasn't enough from you."
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to leave you. You're going to go into San Francisco. Maybe we can join you further on in the season for another chat.
No problem.
Not all about Nello next time, but I have enjoyed speaking about him. And you're enjoying your work, you're doing MUTV stuff, aren't you?
Lovely, yeah, it's great. Mm. Yeah, I just wish Paddy was here.
I know.
You know, he's great company.
He is.
Good character.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that he's done it for so long, and not to say that he's not going to come back on tours, but he's in his mid-70s, he's still got a sharp brain, terrible jumpers. he's a very good people person. Paddy, he's good with the fans.
He's
good around people, and you know he can't carry on forever.
No, but he should have filled in his visa form properly. Be here.
I actually don't trust his ability to fill it in. This is a man who stored the numbers in his mobile phone. He wrote them down on the inside of his glasses case. Thanks for your time, Luke.
No problem. Thanks, Andy.
That's it for this United We Stand podcast.
hope you enjoyed listening to Lou as much as I enjoyed speaking to him. You know, when I see Lou, I think it's great that you see former players like him at Manchester United games now, home and away. I've seen him all over the country and all over Europe and all over the world. And I know it's part of his job. I know he gets paid to do it. But I see a man in love with football. I see a man who's never short of an opinion about football. And I see a good man with happy memories of Manchester United. I can sort of remember him from my youth as a player, and I remember him being a very good player, but I'm told that in his day he was an absolute cracking player, Lou Macari. The next podcast will be next week. Manchester United are playing a game against a team called Liverpool, and we will have a podcast around that. Please spread the words of the podcasts with what we're doing. We're putting a lot of time into them, as you may have gathered. We're also putting a lot of time into the next issue of United We Stand, which goes on sale against Liverpool. I've got 44 pages of original content there. There's loads of insight. And we know that loads of you already subscribe, be it to the printed edition. You buy it at the ground. You buy it in the newsagents. You get the digital edition sent to you. Just spread the word with United We Stand. We've put a lot of time into it. The mag's going really well. Really pleased to say that, you know, some printed publications are struggling. I'm not pleased to say that, but like vinyl, United We Stand is doing all right. We're doing really well at the ground, and long may that continue. But it doesn't run on thin air. We do need support. We do need people to buy it, and plenty of you are doing that. So please spread the word. And until the next podcast, goodbye.